Hello once again, Cougar Nation. Welcome back inside Studio B at the BYU Broadcasting Building in Provo, Utah for our Week 7 installment of the Coordinator's Corner presented by JCW's The Burger Boys. Coming up on today's show, we'll look back on a Las Vegas setback versus Notre Dame. With the loss, the Cougs drop out of the top 25 polls. This week, it's BYU home to Arkansas in the first ever meeting between these two programs. And we're reviewing and previewing with Special Teams Coordinator Ed Lamb and Defensive Coordinator Elisa Tuiaki. We start things off with BYU's Assistant Head Coach, Safeties and Special Teams Coach Ed Lamb. Coach Lamb, good to see you once again.
Thanks, Greg.
Let's maybe get right to the special teams part of the game on Saturday and what your game plan was coming into the game when it came to place kickers for kickoffs, PATs, and field goals. How did you want to play it?
We let it play out all week, but certainly felt like that Justin Smith deserved an opportunity to show that if he could be the guy for us. And so we went into the game planning to play Justin on PATs and any field goals inside of the 50-yard range. And then use Jake outside of that, and also allow Jake to focus in on getting himself back to form on kickoffs, which I thought he did a tremendous job of, all touchbacks in the game.
And some games you go into saying we're going to try and touch it back every time. Sometimes you don't. What was the philosophy going into Saturday that way?
We would like to touch it back all the time, a little bit of wind in the face changes that. Sometimes altitude, humidity changes that, and so we have to be prepared to cover at all times. And so that's really where it comes into play, is, you know, attempting or calling for a touchback, as some people might think you do, can backfire when the kickoff coverage team is not ready to cover that kick. And so it's a little bit of a give and take on philosophically the way to motivate a whole kickoff team.
Have you ever schemed for returns, though, to try and get teams in between the goal line and the 25?
We do. Yeah. We can put extra air under it, but we typically will do that when a touchback is not available. So whether that's we're playing at sea level, or we have humidity, or we're just not striking it well. And so that's a conversation that me and the kickers have before every game. How's it going? How's the ball flying? What do you think? Which direction is optimal for us to put air under it? Which direction is optimal to get touchbacks?
But if it's there for you, you say let it rip and touch it back every time if you can then.
Yes.
Okay. And he was good on the kickoffs that way Saturday night. So we'll get to Justin in a second, but the first play of the game offensively was the INT. First pick for BYU since the USF game. It had been quite a while. We haven't seen a lot of balls like that, haven't seen a lot of starts to games like that. How did it feel to you as you kind of watched things unfold right off the start there to you?
I thought, just out of rhythm, out of sync in terms of what we saw there on the first play from scrimmage by our offense. Just not like us, not a great way to start the game. Love the idea of coming out and being aggressive and taking a shot. It just didn't turn out. Jaron couldn't follow through very well on that. I thought he got the safety looking one way and came back the other. Gunner didn't quite see the ball come out of the hand and didn't adjust, and it was probably a short throw. But love the idea and love the way the defense responded, came out on the short field and forced a field goal attempt instead of giving up a touchdown. And so, I thought, all right, well, we restart the game here. We're not down seven right off the bat, and a little bit of momentum maybe can swing back our way.
Kalani said after the game he felt that Jaron was maybe not 100% going in, and I guess you could say that about a lot of players at this time of season.
Yeah.
Jaron for himself said, I was fine. Early in the week I was a little sore, but during the game I was fine. Did you feel like it was a normal Jaron game? Did he look to you like the guy you'd expect him to be?
Well, he's had better games, certainly, but I think generally that's probably the right answer for the head coach to give when a guy doesn't play his best game. And like you said, all athletes all the time in every sport are not 100%. And so I think Kalani's right, and I'm sure Jaron feels right. He would not put himself – what I know about Jaron Hall is if he doesn't feel 100% ready to lead the team to victory, he will not put himself on the field. So I think they're both right.
Let's get back into that game, the stage of the game that you referenced after the INT. A really nice defensive hold there for BYU, forcing the field goal try. It was a good early response to see where your guys were dialed in that way.
Yeah, a couple of nice responses, which has been good for us. We talked as a whole team about starting faster. The slow starts have been an issue. I thought defensively came out and got that field goal attempt early, backed that up with another three and out, and at that point, didn't sustain that type of effort and that type of performance. But at least initially, I thought the defensive guys brought a lot of energy and execution there early with the first two drives.
So you're down 3-0 early, but then the first BYU score is set up by BYU's longest punt return in 3 years. Hobbs Nyberg, 42-yard return mid-first quarter after a huge punt from Notre Dame. There was some space there, but he had to, first of all, find the ball, which he did a nice job of, and then put together a nice return.
Yeah, Hobbs will get the credit, as he should. He did a really nice job of finding some lanes, but I thought the thing that really set it all up was some nice pressure. We had talked about that early in the week, that if you bring pressure in the right places, that Notre Dame will stay in with a lot of their protection unit. And then Hobbs was able to make essentially one guy miss, and then the rest of the punt rush guys got back and did a really good job of picking up some late blocks. Also did a nice job at what we call our gunner control or cornerback positions. They were able to block the two main gunners that Notre Dame had, and so we forced some other guys to make a tackle that aren't used to making it.
When you were playing, and when I was a younger broadcaster, it felt like the returns were a much bigger part of the game than they are now. That was BYU's only return, punt or kickoff of the game. Notre Dame, meantime, one punt return and then the one return on the free kick after a safety. But traditional kickoff returns and even traditional punt returns are becoming more and more of a rarity these days.
Yeah, the NCAA has taken some of it out in terms of kickoff and kickoff returns, advantageous rules for the kickoff team. And advantageous rules for the return team to fair catch it. Mm-hmm. That didn't exist. The punters, they put so much more air under the ball than they used to. The whole game has gotten bigger and stronger, but the football hasn't changed at all, and the field's no bigger. And so, I think they've taken a lot of that out. I also played with James Dye, who, I can remember when we were on the field in a safe defense, we were not trying to set up a return, and he still housed it against Wyoming in 96. So.
Yeah, James was exceptional.
Yeah.
First chance on a place kick for you did come after the Cody Epps touchdown, and it came after a delay of game penalty, so it was 5 yards farther back than normal for Justin.
That's right. Yeah, we had, people are going to look at Isaac Rex, and he'll take a piece of blame on himself, I'm sure. But that is anytime a player comes running out there late, that's an embarrassing moment for him. But the reality is that's a team problem. Our whole sideline needs to be communicating PAT and field goal. And above that, we have a PAT and field goal coach that should be counting those numbers and was and communicating. And then we've got position coaches. If your position player is on the field on a special team, you should be alert for that. And then I'm overseeing all of that. And mm-hmm. So I failed. We all failed Isaac in that moment. And it's not just a one guy mistake, but it was a mistake that I thought led to a concentration bust by Justin. And he's a better kicker than that. And so it just, it was a steamroll effect.
So it takes the focus away in that moment of his task and had to kind of reset. And you felt like that's where it that caused the miss?
I don't think cause is fair. Justin wouldn't tell you that. He came right off the field and said, oh, that's on me. I chunked it. I think anybody who plays sports can relate to that. You just don't always do things perfectly. But the fact that certainly there's a concentration difference between running out on the field and executing in the way that we practice every day and then having to go out and figure out, okay, what's the problem here? What happened? Is this guy hurt, down? Where's the backup, et cetera? There's a lot going through his mind. And I think the part that Isaac needs to take on himself and that I need to take on myself and any other coaches and players on the sideline need to take on their self, that's the key moving forward. Mm. We all affected Justin a little bit in that situation. How can we be better for our teammate?
And he had been perfect on his PATs. He was 11 for 11 for his career. And BYU had last missed a PAT in the Utah game last season. This has been pretty automatic for BYU.
As it should be. Yeah, and I think as is for most teams. Usually it's a bad snap or hold. This one wasn't. It's good snap, good hold, good protection. And just chunked it. I do it all the time. End up green side instead of
I hear you. To what extent do you think are the current struggles in the kicking game affecting the team as a whole? If there is an effect on other phases of the game, do you think?
Oh yeah, I talk to our whole team about this quite often. It's stacking phases of the game. We talk about getting a defensive stand and then a nice special teams punt return or something like that, and then an offensive. That's when momentum really starts to steamroll. And so you have a chance on the special teams too to take away momentum after the other team scores. We can block a PAT or we can have a great kickoff return after another team scores. You have opportunities to just swing momentum with huge chunks of yardage a lot of times in the special team. So I think you saw that with us. The punt return would set us up for our best moment early in that game that we had for quite some time. And then we lost a little bit of momentum and we just ruined that opportunity there for a point. And it could have been, it was huge late in the game. We're driving for the tying score with a two-point conversion, and we should have been driving for the winning score with the two-point conversion if Kalani wanted to take that option.
Right. Back into the game. You're leading 6-3 after the missed PAT. Notre Dame then answers. Talk about momentum with a 10-play, 75-yard drive. That was kind of a theme, especially in the first half, was the long, time-consuming drives from Notre Dame. They had four consecutive double-digit play possessions in the second and third quarters, each of the drives lasting between 5 and 7 minutes. They scored three TDs on those drives. They got the bang for the buck, and they kept your defense on the field a long time.
Yeah. The way we look at it defensively is we kept our defense on the field for a long time, and that's the way we want to look at it offensively for our team. And I'm involved in all three phases. We have to keep the other offense cold, and defensively we have to get our offense out on the field. And so when you talk about time of possession, it's a whole team issue, and special teams can have a huge effect on that as well. So we really failed through that first and second quarter.
Notre Dame tight end Michael Mayer, a big part of those long drives. He was all but unguardable on the night. You knew well about him coming in. What was the game plan maybe going in? We'll talk more with Coach E about it too. But that was a guy that when they needed a big play, they could go to him, and he came through every time essentially.
He came through for them for the win, and a tremendous player. But this is oftentimes when things like this come up, I want to go to a film study session in this show, because I know people have that same type of assumption, is that he came through every time. There were times when our players did a really good job. We played zones against him. We played man against him. We knew he would be a problem coming into the game. He won the game for them, and he beat us consistently, players and coaches. And I give him all the credit in the world. But, that would be taken away from some of what our players and pass rush did. The times when he was targeted and the ball was never thrown, because our guys did do a good job on those particular plays. It's hard to just say simply, yeah, he beat us every time. Sorry, not to be disagreeable there.
No, I get it. He didn't catch every target, and right. He wasn't targeted every time because you actually did the job.
There were some times when the boys came through, and of course I would want to recognize that when we're talking in that context.
But that said, and though we're talking about an opponent, if you see him playing in the NFL for a few years, it won't be a surprise. He's got really great abilities.
He was outstanding. The two that he beat us in man-to-man, one of them was a four-man rush, one of them was a blitz man-to-man. And Micah Harper had really tight coverage. We had pretty good pressure on the quarterback. Quarterback stood in there and delivered a great football that only could be caught by their tight end. And then the tight end caught the back end of the ball, which is always a tremendous skill asset and concentration, and shows strong hands and soft hands at the same time. He did a great job.
So you get to halftime, you're trailing, but with very few yards, but also very few plays again. It was similar to the Utah State game the week before. The offense was barely out on the field. It was 19 snaps at Utah versus Utah State, I think 21 against Notre Dame. You're averaging 20 snaps per half. That's almost not enough time to get your offense into a game plan.
Yes. Again, if you're asking me as one of our offensive players and staff members, I'm saying we can't have one play drives. We had a one play drive where we threw an interception. We had a one play drive where we took a safety.
Right.
That's a piece of it. As a defensive coach, and I work most closely with the defense, we've got to have more three and outs. We've got to get off the field in better field position. As a special teams coach, I'm saying we have to supplement. Just like our early score was off of a great punt return, we need more of those. We need block punts. We need great kickoff returns. We have to do things to help each other as a team, because it's the ultimate team game, because on the field, you actually aren't all out there together. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's the ultimate team game, is because you say, this is my offense and we've got to win this thing together, or this is my defense, et cetera. And as a whole team, we got to do a better job of keeping the offense on the field to score.
The term you used a little while ago with me was stacking. You need to stack these components together to get the flywheel rolling.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. And when an example of that would be if the defense is out there for 10 plus plays and gets a stop inside our own end. Well, that's good, but it's not the best thing we could do. The best thing we could do would be three and out and give us field position in the right spot. And so every player on the team, every coach on the staff, whether you lose by 40-something to 40-something, or you lose by a low-scoring game or a medium-scoring game like we did, every player on the team and every coach owns the loss.
Just to piggyback off what you just said, one of the stats that I like to look at in college football is average starting field position, for that reason, because it is a three-phase stat.
Yes.
Every phase contributes to where you start your drives, and the closer you are to the goal line, the more points you're going to score. So it's a notable note, but they all contribute to it. It's not just one phase that gets you good field position.
Absolutely. Love those type of stats that really speak to the whole team. Average starting field position, turnovers, takeaways. Yeah. That turnover takeaway battle is another one.
Okay, time for a short break. And a reminder, reminder that BYU football with Kalani Sitake airs tomorrow night and every Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time, 8:30 Eastern on the BYU TV app. We have a live studio audience across the hall over in Studio C. I'll have the seat request link on my Twitter feed today. You can go there to get your seats, and we'll see you in Studio C tomorrow night. Coming up after this break, how BYU got back in the game with Notre Dame with a much better second half of football Saturday in Las Vegas. Plus, we'll get players of the week as the Coordinator's Corner continues. We're brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys. Back with more Coach Lamb after this.
The punt away from the goal line. Hammered this one. Hammered it. Back at the 33 of BYU, Nyberg makes the catch. Gets past the first Irish tackler. 45. He's got midfield. He's got 45. He's got 40 and 35. 30 and nearly the 25-yard line. Hobbs Nyberg.
All right, to BYU now 4-2 on the season after a 28-20 loss in Las Vegas Saturday night at Allegiant Stadium. Irish win for a seventh time in nine meetings with BYU. It's been hard for the Cougs to score against Notre Dame. They've never scored more than 23 in any game against the Irish. And Saturday, 20 wasn't enough on this night. You love to get to the 24-point number, kind of a plateau that's kind of held over years. Coach Lamb has scored 24 or more. You give yourself about a 90% chance to win. Overall, and it's just been, I mean, that's a quality program, tougher sledding against a team like that.
That's right, yeah, and that's something we don't talk about a lot, that 24, because I think sometimes it can kind of separate an offense and defense. Well, you know, we held them to 23, why didn't we win, you know, that kind of a thing. But it is a really good a benchmark for an offense and defense, and we were close on both ends, and that's why I think the team came away feeling like, well, we let one slip away, we got to play better, but, you know, we're a team that fought till the end.
Preceding two games against Wyoming and Utah State, 10-plus penalties, only one penalty in this game. Kalani said the mistakes showed up maybe, though, in other parts of the game in terms of just not being sharp enough, and it wasn't just all about penalties.
That's how a coach should view it. There's certainly we're not expecting to play a perfect game, and so we want to just focus on the things that we can get better at. In prior weeks, we really had put an emphasis on playing a cleaner game, and I thought we did that, especially the goofy penalties, you know, pressing on somebody's helmet or throwing a shoe or things like that. There's no place for that in football, and it costs your team. We cleaned that area up, but there's still plenty to work on. We feel like we have a good enough team to win, and so when we don't win, we want to focus in on what we as coaches need to get better at, what we need to do better, decide better, scheme better, strategize better, and also teach better.
Maybe similar to the Oregon game, Notre Dame controlled the middle eight. They score a touchdown on their final drive of the first half, first drive of the second half, take an 18-6 lead to 25-6. So tough start to the second half, but again, we'll get to the response, which I know you're really proud of.
Yeah, really. Yeah, exactly. It's a That middle eight is an important momentum piece, and the reason why we talk about that, and a lot of teams right now are talking about that, is that can sometimes you take a close game and then lose that middle eight and it becomes a blowout. And that's what I'm so proud of the boys with, is they just didn't flinch. Or another way to say it, another sports analogy, boxing, they picked themselves up off the mat when nobody gave them a chance to hang in that game. And we had three chances there at the end of the game with the ball to get the winning or tying score and weren't able to get it done. But that, you know, in terms of the context of what we're talking about now, the mental toughness, I really like the mental toughness aspect.
And the comeback started with the big play TD to Cody Epps midway through the third, and we just see him growing week by week into a more and more integral part of this BYU offense. He's been tremendous.
He has. He's a great he's what I call a balance player. We haven't talked about this as a staff. Maybe Fessy would disagree with me, but Fessy was a player for me at Southern Utah and always played the game with tremendous balance, and so his catch radius was big. He was never wrong-footed. He was never off. He makes the quarterback look so accurate, and I see a lot of that in Cody. And I think that Fessy has saw that, really, that potential in Cody as a recruit and as a player before maybe other guys on our staff felt like he would be such a main player. I credit those two for, you know, developing Cody into a great player.
And he's got a long career ahead of him here at BYU. I call him a veteran freshman because he got here a couple of years ago, but he's really seeing his first, you know, real season of action.
That's right. Yeah, he's that got COVID year, kind of gave him an extra year, so to speak, and really proud of him. And he's a great teammate, great guy to have in our locker room and on the field. And so we always cheer a little extra harder for those guys that can bring up the play of those around them.
It became a 12-point game at that point, then a defensive three and out at a really huge time. That's when I kind of sensed that the tide began to turn. It was a three and out. It wasn't just a stop. It was a three and out, which was kind of rare. And then the offense got right back on it.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That was everybody on our sideline. The energy, the BYU fans in the stadium took over for a minute. It was like Cougar Nation said, okay, we have a chance here. We've created a chance. Mm-hmm. Let's finish this thing.
And the touchdown early in the fourth quarter following this really impressive three and out. And again, the volume in the building, the sense and the vibe was that the Cougars were on the comeback trail. And then the Cougars punch a touchdown in early in the fourth quarter. Chris Brooks with a nice run. And suddenly it's a whole new ball game, 25-20 with a quarter to go. It was on.
That's right. Yeah, it was a restart of the game almost, essentially. And just felt, I think our players felt really good about each other in that moment, offensively, defensively, special teams. The guys were playing around. Just, hey, appreciate your fight. Let's go.
Then it was a Max Tooley INT, and the wave even crested more. It felt like that was really going to happen. There was a drop ball on a play that you kind of wanted to have, and there might have been a penalty that could have been called on that same play. But on the ensuing Notre Dame drive, you needed to keep the Irish out of the end zone to still have a shot, and you did that.
You're talking about the Tooley interception?
After the Tooley interception, it was a drop ball. They got the ball back, Notre Dame did, and they had to settle for a field goal, keeping it a one-score game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
kept them out of the end zone.
I thought we solidified there in the red zone. Overall, one of the bright spots was red zone defense, which is an area that we had targeted for improvement coming into the game, and the players worked really hard at it. I thought that was one of the things that kept the score down, even though the total yardage stats and the time of possession really favored Notre Dame. The score was kept lower because of some key opportunity plays there in the red zone.
So possession time can be a skewed stat because it's what you do with your time, not necessarily just the time itself. But there are some instances where if the gap is too wide, pure time does make a difference. And it was 41 minutes to 19 minutes basically in possession time, and 27 more plays to defend than Notre Dame had to defend. That's a lot of extra football. Say extra football you had to play kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's sustaining drives on offense and not sustaining them, or getting helping the other team not to sustain drives when they're on offense. That's where we failed. Got to do a better job offensively and defensively of getting that. Not so much time of possession, but number of plays maybe, or the sustaining of drives, or keeping ourselves hot by being on the field, mm-hmm. making their offense go a little bit colder by staying on the field, and vice versa on defense, trying to make that occur.
Okay. That's the final score from Saturday night. Let's get to our players of the week, and we'll start, Coach Lamb, with your wheelhouse, special teams. Who did you like from Saturday?
Well, gave the overall the top block, something that we work on each week as in the punt return and kickoff return games. We gave those to the punt return team as a whole. There's a lot of good clips to show. I'll be showing that to the rest of the team later on.
Okay.
Britt Hogan as the player of the game. He has quietly come in while Austin Riggs has been hurt and just delivered on-point snap after on-point snap. And so a really nice job by him. And then in the coverage game, Chris Jackson racked up a lot of coverage points. He forced some fair catches by their punt returner. They had a really dangerous punt returner. I thought Chris and our punter did a really good job. And then Carter Krupp and Keenan Peely made some key tackles as well during the game on coverage.
I asked you last week how Britton Hogan was doing as the backup snapper, and he says, "Well, have you been talking about him? If not, the answer is he's been doing pretty well."
Yeah, maybe that played into my mind. Maybe somebody should be talking about him in a more positive way.
Offensive player of the week from Coach Aaron Roderick came in, and Coach A-Rod chose Cody Epps, who we just talked about a minute ago. This is the second straight week that Cody Epps wins the award from Coach Roderick.
That's right. And again, for me, I mean, it's tremendous to see him putting up the numbers, but he raises the play of everybody around him because of his attitude, his approach. He's got a really positive energy at all times in the building, on the practice field, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm glad you referenced kind of the off-the-field part of it because we only got to have him in for the Satake show 1 week, but the personality, just the astute, he's just a sharp kid. Really like him.
He sure is. Yeah. He's a fit. At BYU, a lot of times we kind of lean on that sometimes as a crutch. Well, we have a small pool of fits at BYU. But he's not LDS, didn't grow up in this area, and yet he's a perfect fit, in my opinion, for what BYU is looking for.
And he volunteered this on the show. I didn't ask about it, but he says, you know what, as someone who's not of the LDS faith, I just love how welcome I've felt here. And he just seemed really happy to be in this spot, so I'm happy for him.
Yeah, he's appreciative of a Christ-centered approach, and that's a fit.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, time for a break. As we take this time out, a reminder that dinner after the game at JCW's includes something for everybody, from burgers to wings, shakes to salads. JCW's quality and a lot of it in Lehigh, American Fork, Provo, South Jordan, and Harriman. This weekend, BYU hosting Arkansas in their first ever meeting. Tune in for Cougar pregame live on BYU Radio. starting at 1:30 Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Mountain Time this Saturday. Coming up next, closing comments with special teams coordinator Ed Lamb. The Coordinator's Corner continues after this. We're brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys.
Taking his drop is Hall. Goes deep down the middle. Wide open as Cody Epps makes the catch. 25-20, 15-10, 5. He's going in. Touchdown! 53-yard scoring strike. Jaren Hall to Cody Epps.
You're in the Coordinator's Corner, brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys, visiting with BYU Special Teams Coordinator Ed Lamb. 4-2 BYU taking on 3-3 Arkansas this Saturday afternoon at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. We see Cody Epps in the clip, fellow wide receiver Gunnar Romney. Kalani Sitake in his press conference this hour confirming that Gunnar had some testing at an area hospital after leaving the game on Saturday night, but that he returned home, did not spend the night, as had been reported, and he's hoping that he'll be available to you as soon as this week. That's good news on Gunner.
Yeah, we fully expect him to. That's just it was a precautionary measure to make sure that his previous injury didn't reoccur, and it did not. So I think he's good to go.
Okay. All right. Halfway through the regular season now, 6 games through 12 regular season games. I get grading becomes kind of a cliche thing to look at, but how do you view the first half of the regular season for BYU?
Well, it's too soon after a very disappointing loss for me to probably intelligently answer that question. I'm completely immersed in Arkansas, preparing for Arkansas and the things that we immediately have to get better at. And in my order, it's special teams and then defense and then whatever small part I have in our offense, which is small, but I do look at the whole team at all times, and I think there's a lot of areas where we can be a lot better. I think that we can finish with a fantastic season, one that BYU fans can be proud of. Most importantly, our coaches and players can be proud of. But we've got work to do, and a lot of it.
Okay, Arkansas is coming up, and KJ Jefferson becomes the player to analyze and monitor. He missed the last game with a concussion. The coach's expectation to be back at practice today. We shall see if he gets cleared to play. And he is a special quarterback akin to Jaren Hall in terms of how important he is to his team.
He's definitely important to his team. Reminds me of, just another SEC quarterback that ran a similar offense in the same fashion, but Cam Newton. It all revolves around his ability to run the ball downhill right at the defense. He's big-bodied. He's got a lot of speed. They've got a backup quarterback that does the same thing, can really hurt you with his legs. And then offensively, their system is designed to have a high completion percentage at the same time and be able to get the ball quickly out on the perimeter and into space, taking some occasional shots and keep you honest. It's a really big challenge for our defense.
SEC challenge coming in this Saturday. It'll be an afternoon kick at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. Coach Lamb, good to be with you as always. Thank you for the time. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, that is Coach Ed Lamb. Get expanded pregame coverage of BYU's game against Arkansas this Saturday. It's BYU Sports Nation Game Day, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Coming up next, we'll hear from BYU defensive coordinator Eli Satuiaki. This is the Coordinator's Corner, brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys. You're in the Coordinator's Corner, brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys. BYU now 4-2, unranked this week after spending the first 5 weeks of the season in the polls. BYU coming off a 28-20 setback to Notre Dame in Las Vegas on Saturday, hosting Arkansas this Saturday afternoon. We begin the second half hour of today's show with BYU's defensive coordinator and defensive tackles coach Eli Satuiaki. Coach E, welcome back in.
Oh, thank you.
Well, what did you think the defense would be able to do well against Notre Dame when you headed down there?
It's Notre Dame. You know that they're a tough team. They got good players, and we just wanted them to battle. There's a bigger game plan, probably for more takeaways in the pass game. Thought that we missed out on some of the opportunities there. More of just kind of staying front on the quarterback and getting some tip balls. We got one, but I thought there were more opportunities. And then we knew going in, and I think they knew going in, with a quarterback that they were still breaking in a couple games in. It was about stopping the run, and the boys battled, and as I was watching the game film, it was just a lot of I don't know if the word's cringy, but it was really the physicality of the game. It was even for myself to watch. I mean, there was a lot of physicality going on. There's a lot of banging and appreciation for the boys, you know, working hard. It was a really, really physical game with the physical O-line and really good running backs.
So when you say cringe, you don't mean cringeworthy as in bad. You mean wincing, like that's a hard-hitting game.
Wince is the word. Wince.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it's wincing. It's even for myself, you know. It's you're watching it and definitely was an appreciation for just the effort. And it never disappeared. I mean, it was the whole time, even when we were down and we needed to fight back on offense and come back and get some stops. I mean, the boys just played super, super tough and super hard. And, you know, we didn't come away with the win, definitely appreciated after the game just the amount of effort and physicality and willingness, right? Like willingness to put their body in harm's way to try to win a game.
BYU allowed 5.2 yards per rush from Notre Dame, but on the flip side, you have to look at the flip side too, BYU gained 5.4 yards per rush against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
It went both ways.
It did, and you know, there was the, in the 4-minute drill, they had the longest run of the day, which I think was 46 yards, and it was a missed tackle. And so it's a, feel like you come away with just making, you know, better technical, sound tackles in those situations. You hold them under 200, with as many times as they ran the ball, but you know, obviously it wasn't that case. And I thought that their backs were just phenomenal players, especially in the, you know, that third down run where Talon Alfrey comes down the alley to make the play. I mean, he put his body on the line and he went to go make that play. And their running back just he just did a really, really phenomenal hurdle move and got the first down, or didn't, whatever it was. It was just, I thought their backs ran hard. And they ended up making more plays than we did.
What was your scouting report on that new quarterback for the Irish, Drew Pine? And what did he show you that maybe you hadn't seen on film?
Yeah, you know, I thought that he was a tough kid. We got to him and we hit him, and there were a couple of those times where he fit the ball in there right as he was getting thrown and just did a phenomenal job. And so, you know, we didn't do a good enough job executing the game plan. Felt like we needed to be better about just staying more frontal. Yeah, that play right there where he tosses him, you think he got a sack.
I thought they had a sack. Yeah,
yeah, and the guy that he threw it to was one that came and cut blocked Batty, and Batty avoided it, and he got back up and got the ball. It's just one of those tough plays. And so, you know, he did a phenomenal job just sitting in the pocket and, you know, in the drop eights. And so as we talked about it on the headset, okay, you know, drop eight early was good. The drop eight on that long yardage, we came out of our zones, started chasing routes, which ended up giving them a hole. And so we said, okay, let's not do that anymore. Let's go back and let's run this pressure with that, run that pressure, and it didn't hit. And we went to another pressure, and so we did hit him, but he got the ball off in a phenomenal way and put the ball where only the receiver can catch it. And their tight end was just an amazing player, and I think, you know, the whole world knows because he's a projected first rounder and is just a phenomenal player. But you know, they made plays when they needed it. And that was probably the frustrating thing as we look at it. It was third downs, come out of some of those third downs, and we're out of drives, we're getting the ball back. But they converted too many of the third downs, and we needed to get off the field.
We saw that you almost got home on Pine there, but as it turns out, no official sacks of him. The only two losses on the year are the two games, the only two games you haven't had a sack. Didn't get to Oregon's guy Bo Nix either. It's not the only part of the game, clearly, but it's a factor, right, when you're not able to get home on a quarterback, at least occasionally.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's got to be a little bit of uncomfortability for the quarterback, but you know, the times that we did hit him and the times that we did hurry him, I just thought that he played really, really poised for a backup quarterback. And, you know, the games that we had seen with him playing against Cal, playing against North Carolina, you could tell that there was a little bit of a leash on him from the coordinator, but, you know, the coordinator cut him loose, and he did a really good job, I thought, in this game. And obviously just the back and forth with stopping the run and all that just gives you an opportunity to open up the pass game.
There's more to pressure than simply sacks. You look at a lot of different factors when talking about havoc or creating defensive havoc. Why has it been hard maybe for BYU to cause as much havoc as you'd like to see them cause so far this year, if that's indeed the case?
Yeah,
or are you kind of walking a fine line on that right now?
Yeah, it's so much more complex. It's hard for me to speak in the language of havoc being just hits on the quarterback. I mean, it's really, I think we talked about it before about trying to get into third and six plus, where now your first down call, your second down call, what they're doing comes into it a lot, because you don't just call anything. It's what personnel grouping are they in, what's the game plan, what are they doing, how can you try to get a TFL, put them in a longer situation. So I thought that, like I said, I thought that there were opportunities for us to get off on third downs, which for me, as we look at it and look at the stats, there's some TFLs happening or just some good run stops happening on first and second down or incompletes or whatever the case is to get you in those situations, but we just didn't come away with enough third downs for us to get off the field and get the ball back for our offense.
Yeah, the offense ranks 118th right now in possession time. That means a lot of time for the defense to be on the field. And Saturday, the defense was on the field for more than two-thirds of the football game, more than 40 minutes.
Yeah, the series of play in the first half was a little tougher. You know, we lost the coin flip and go out on we received the ball, and the pick right out the gate just put us in a situation that was a little bit tougher. But I thought the boys bowed up, and we held them to a field goal, and then you know, kind of the back and forth before the long drive, fourth down stop, and then the safety. You know, we were on a 10-play drive. Came out with a fourth down stop and then gave it up on the safety and back up on the field for another 10-play drive. It was a lot of snaps, too many snaps for the defense. But again, obviously the offense is working to convert their third downs, and we've got to get off of the field in third down opportunities that we get. And I think there are several of those that were manageable that we just didn't execute, and they did.
But there were some really good responses on the night, whether it's right after the pick or whether it's holding them on fourth down near your goal line or whether it's getting a three and out as you're making the comeback effort. There were times when this defense really just stood up, I thought.
I thought they played hard all night. And, you get into some of these games and the personality of the game starts to go one direction where the offense may be struggling that night. And the defense, you know, put in bad situations. I thought the boys played hard, and you look at it and you wish that you would have won the game just for the effort that they put in alone. You know, like I said, just the physicality of it and the willingness to sacrifice their body in order to make plays. Notre Dame wanted the same thing, and they obviously executed better than we did.
You mentioned third downs. Notre Dame was 6-for-9 on third in the first half. They go 11-for-16 in the game. And a lot of the third down targets were going to tight end Michael Mayer.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a monster all night long.
Yeah, he did. I mean, we knew coming in he was going to be a really good player. We had several conversations, just different things that we were going to do and try. And, between all the pressures, between the drop eights, between changing up some of the mans even, we ended up switching later on and never really got an opportunity to run it. But one of the basically robber mans where the safety is no longer playing the post and he's going to steal any crossing route. But even then, some of the routes that were run, they were just really well executed and balls that were dropped right in there.
And as Coach Lamb said with us in the first half hour, yeah, Mayer was a phenomenal, but yet there were times, and you'll be able to go back and see it on film, where you did what you wanted to do to prevent a target going to him. That happened as well on the night.
Yeah. It's, the game is about players, and the game is about trying to stop the best player. And, you know, he went off on a couple of those. We gave a couple of them, too, like that drop eight where he ended up finding them really, really late. Mm-hmm. We had to have more relishing rushes from the three-man front. And we, the touchdown that we gave up, the first one was just, a play by a young player that just should have known better. I mean, we should have coached it better, but it wasn't anything that was spectacular. It was just somebody that just blew a coverage.
Okay, when you got to halftime, the second quarter, the defense was on the field for 12 minutes and 22 seconds of the 15 minutes the second quarter. Essentially, the entire quarter, you're on D. When you got to the locker room, what was kind of your thought down 18-6?
Felt like it was important for us to just continue to encourage get them to play hard. And there wasn't any quit in them. When we went to the locker room to talk, it was more about, hey, what are you seeing out there? What are you feeling? What are you thinking? As well as some of the adjustments that we had and started to come to in the second half, is just do you think this is going to work? Should we come out of this? And so the discussion was there. Love the input from them. Looking into their eyes, felt like there wasn't any quit, and there wasn't, going into the second half. And just a little too late really is what it ended up being. But really appreciated that there was just fight in their eyes when we came to the locker room. It was no blame. That's one of the things also that could end up hitting a team is, you know, you're playing hard and you're doing this, but you're just like, those guys are doing that. But it wasn't ever like that. It's all about us sticking together as a team. Everybody knows that they've got their part that they need to do. And we needed to get the ball back and get them stops was the name of the game. It wasn't anything that turned negative. And that's one of the things Coach Rod and I have talked about just in the past. There was an interview from a head coach that said that was going through basically a two-game skid. And said, well, we can't let the language, of the offense and defense weaponize against each other. It's very important that we stick together, and I think that's what the players did in the locker room.
All right, heading into the break, a reminder to watch After Further Review tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern time on the BYU TV app, as Dave McCann, Blaine Fowler, and David Nixon break down this past week's game. When we come back, more with BYU defensive coordinator Eli Satuiaki as the coordinator's corner continues. We're brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys. Back with more from Coach E after this.
Pine, clean pocket, deflected ball, and intercepted by the Cougars! It's a takeaway at the 16-yard line!
Right on the field for interception. First down.
A deflected ball, and Max Tooley, with his third interception of the season, takes it away for the Cougs.
Back on the coordinator's corner, visiting with BYU defensive coordinator and D-tackles coach Eli Satuiaki. Cougs now 4-2 on the season after Saturday's setback in Las Vegas. Notre Dame outlasting BYU 28-20 at Allegiant Stadium in front of almost 63,000 fans, lots of them in BYU blue. The middle eight gets discussed. Final 4 minutes first half, first 4 minutes second half. They scored touchdowns on both of those drives. And it was kind of like you had to start on D in both halves. With the pick coming early, you were defending the starts of both halves. They make it a 25-6 ball game, and the theme was long drives. They weren't just scoring. They were scoring on long drives. There were a number of those on the night.
Yeah, those. And again, going back to third downs, there's opportunities for us to get out of those, but those long drives that end up in touchdowns is just, there's opportunities to get out of them. They did a phenomenal job. The two-minute drive, the one before halftime, I just thought that was a heck of, it was actually underthrown. It was a heck of a play by the receiver to come over the top of our defender and make that one. That was tough. But in the second half, there was a big emphasis put on us just coming out and trying to get a stop, which we didn't do. But, the boys continued to battle and kept playing hard.
You made it a one-score game. And then when Max Tooley makes that pick we just saw, probably thinking we're going to win this game.
There was the pick. There was 11 minutes left. And then we actually – we'll give up a long run, and Judy gets him tackled down inside the 10, and we come up with a field goal, and so now we're down 8 with still an opportunity to come and tie it, and so still there was a belief the whole night just that we were gonna come out of it, at least go to overtime and make a win out of it.
Notre Dame converted a final 3rd and 4, close one, in the final 2 minutes to kind of put it away. But, man, again, that was a game where BYU felt like despite the struggles and the unevenness of the plays and time and everything else, you were going to be right there.
Yeah.
Great fight.
Yeah, there was no lack of fight. And, again, you wish we would have won it just for the effort they put into it. But, we make the corrections. There's so much to correct off of film. I'm sure offensively, defensively, and on special teams, but even with all the mistakes, there was still a chance, and I think that's one thing that you can take out of that. But love the way that they played all the way to the end. I know that they appreciated all the fans that came out, and it was loud when we were on the field too on defense. Didn't know if that was going to be the case going to an away game like that, but it was. It was the fans came out and were super loud.
No defensive penalties on the night for BYU.
Which is a good thing. We need more takeaways, and you just keep playing with. You look at it for us over the night, it was really better technique. Just better technique. I thought the adjustments were good. The boys responded, but just better technique gives us more opportunity to come off the field as well as get more takeaways.
Okay, your two defensive players of the game from Saturday night are.
Keenan Peely and John Nelson thought that they were just very consistent. And obviously, when it comes to corner play and D-line play, sometimes those guys don't have the most stats. But the way that they played, obviously Keenan's just been so consistent, just been a leader for us and done really well in the things that we've asked. And John Nelson just played lights out game for himself. Thought it was a really, really good game for him, considering the things that we were asking him to do.
Okay, thank you, Coach. Time for a break. When we come back, I'll look ahead to BYU and Arkansas with Coach Tuiaki. As we break, we remind you that for your daily Cougar Sports play-by-play, tune in weekdays to BYU Sports Nation at noon Eastern Time on BYU TV and BYU Radio. You're in the Coordinator's Corner. It's brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys. Back with more from Coach Tuiaki right after this.
Coordinator's Corner on BYU TV is brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys, Built Bar, Fuel the Journey, and by Siegfried and Jensen, helping Utah families for over 30 years.
Here in the Coordinator's Corner, brought to you by JCW's The Burger Boys, wrapping up today's show with BYU's defensive coordinator, Eli Satuiaki. This Saturday, it's BYU and Arkansas. Razorbacks have lost three in a row after a 3-0 start. Tough, tough schedule. Arkansas losing in a rout at Mississippi State on Saturday. They played without their starting quarterback, KJ Jefferson, remarkable player, and the thought is he could be back in time for you guys. So I think you're probably planning as if he'll play. Is that your thought?
Yeah, yeah. We've watched some of the interviews from their head coach as well as their offensive coordinator, and he had a chance to come back and play this last week for them, and they just decided to hold him. And so I think we'll definitely see him this week.
Okay. What makes him special?
Ability to run and throw. I mean, anytime that you face a quarterback that's a dual threat like that and has been in the offense and runs the scheme and knows what the expectation is, I mean, those guys are, you know, obviously veteran kids are tough to defend. And so, you know, he's got all the tools.
The only teams that run more frequently in terms of rush attempts per game are the three service academies. So you know what Arkansas wants to do.
Yeah, this is going to be a physical game, and it's going to, again, another game that comes down to just stopping the run and finding creative ways to play them. And really, when we're watching film, it really is just a lot of thought of, do we play these guys like a service academy because of just the way that they run the ball, they run the quarterback, and it's really, really tough defending schemes like this.
Okay, one last thought for you. The Oregon loss was one thing. The Notre Dame loss, it felt different, didn't it? I mean, did the two games feel different in terms of how they turned out and what your guys showed in each game?
At least on the defensive side, I'd probably speak more to that. Did feel like maybe there's a there was never any doubt in our minds all the way to the end that we were going to come back and win it. Thought the Oregon game maybe we're probably just looked like the game, the moment was just too big for us at the time. So
not the case this past week though.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, Coach, appreciate the feedback and the contributions from you every week, and we'll see you again here next week.
Thank you.
All right, that is Coach Eli Satuiaki. That'll do it for our Week 7 edition of the Coordinator's Corner. For Coaches Lamb and Tuiaki, my name is Greg Grubel. We will remind you that it's BYU in Arkansas with an 11:30 a.m. radio and TV pregame, and then a 1:30 kick from LaVell Edwards Stadium. Back-to-back daytime games, by the way, the week next at Liberty. It will also be a 1:30 p.m. Mountain Time kick. We found that out today. All right, for the coaches, I'm Greg Grubel. Have a great week. Go Cougs.